My name is Kirsty Rayner, and I am obsessed with all things mindset, meditation, business, and helping you to overcome those mindset blocks and magical breakthroughs in every season of life. I'm a multiple business owner, accredited transformational and mindset coach, Vedic meditation teacher, a yogi with 10 years marketing experience on paper, but informally, I'm obsessed with growth, a pale rosé wine lover, chocoholic, and your new bestie. We get into all the secrets and hacks to get you in an abundant mindset. So go and grab a coffee, get cozy, get comfortable. This is the Mindset and Me podcast. Welcome back to the Mindset and Me podcast. On this week's episode, I have the wonderful Giselle Lapompe Moore. She is a spiritual guide and author. She excitingly has a book coming out tomorrow called Take It In. She is one of the most authentic women I know. I am so lucky to have known her for a good few years now, and I'm so grateful to have her on the podcast. So welcome to the podcast, Giselle. I've just introduced you obviously a little bit before, but for anyone who's not come across you, I'd love you to share your story.
Of course. Yeah. So I think it's really interesting when we think about our spiritual journeys. And I do think that there is definitely, some of us have these like really big moments of like, I don't know, I don't really like to use the word awakening. I think we are just remembering something. But I do think that mine started when I was a child, and yeah, maybe a symptom of me being an only child and having a lot of time to play in my imagination. And I remember my mum gave me this book of 300 things to do when you're bored. And I think it's like, it really builds character. And I would have these really intense visions and dreams and insights. And yeah, terrifying when you're like six and you just want to go and play with your friends. And you're having like the secrets of life given to you. It was just like a lot to deal with. But I had a really great support system. So on that level, my spiritual practices have just been a part of how I've seen the world. When I was about 15, they became a bit more intentional. So I started working with the law of attraction. I was doing my own rituals. And yeah, it kind of just was like this like thread that kept weaving. And I moved to New York when I was in my early 20s, and I had this absolute belief and faith that when I moved there, my life would be obviously Carrie Bradshaw's life. Mm-hmm. And instead, I was like plagued by anxiety attacks. And my symptoms were so viscerally physical, and I learned how to meditate. And during that meditation practice, my, you know, anxiety kind of went. And I was so struck by the mind-body connection and seeing it firsthand in my body that it just became the catalyst of, huh, I wonder if or how much my life, other people's lives could change if we just knew that. So that was kind of like the beginning question or prompt that led me into this work.
My goodness, that's so powerful. Thank you for sharing that as well. Mm-hmm. I know it can be really difficult to talk about past anxieties that we've had. So thank you. I'd love to kind of know and get into that space. So let's almost like rewind back to there. You know, you're in New York, like tell, like what is the experience? Like how is it feeling? And especially for someone maybe who's looking to get into a meditation practice, because it can be quite difficult at first to be in the stillness.
Yeah. And I think there is, you know, two approaches to meditation. And when I was doing my teacher training, it was very much from this lens of, yeah, it's not about, you know, optimization and trying to seek these really transcendent moments of bliss and enlightenment. It's just like survival to get you through some really messy times, and how we can almost build up this inner resource system so that we can navigate those messy times. And New York is arguably the messiest city in the world. And I was there with so much expectation and hope, and I had such a great time. But I was also confronted by being, you know, like 22 in a completely new city by myself for the first time. And I was in a really hard relationship, which was quite abusive. And I was just really stuck. I didn't know who I was anymore. And the only way that I could get even close to that was having the space and the time to go inwards to remember who that was. And that's why I keep using that word remembering, because it wasn't about finding myself as I thought the city could offer me. It was actually me remembering who I was before life got there, before the hardships, before trauma, before anxieties got there. And that's what my meditation gave me. And I think it's knowing that it's always there, that especially on those really rough days, you can come back to your practice without fanfare, without ceremony. It's just you in your space, any space, 3 minutes to 2 hours, who cares how long it is, remembering who you are.
It's very reflective practice as well. And I think just to take those moments, like what was a feeling, I guess, that was coming up for you? Did you have like a repetitive feeling when you were like in that practice that kept drawing you back?
I think it was just a real sense of control. A control that I didn't feel like I had outside my meditation practice. Because, you know, when we're in anxiety, you can't control what your body's doing. So if my body was trembling or shaking, I wasn't in control of that. And that's a really scary place to be in, right? Is this body that has been my home for 20 something years, I can't control what it's doing. I don't know how to make that stop. It wasn't as simple as taking, you know, an ibuprofen when we have a headache. I didn't know what to do with it. So in my practice, knowing that there's another breath coming was incredibly comforting and reassuring to me. Because in that moment, I was like, I just have to breathe. And then with every breath that I took, you know, the trembling would stop or my heart rate would slow down. My palms would stop sweating. And I was like, I do have some ownership. I do have some power here. And that for me was huge because I just trusted myself again.
Oh, goodness, that's a really amazing way to say that you trusted yourself. And I guess you were having those really somatic feelings and symptoms. Anxiety is a terrible emotion to have to suffer with. And it is a true suffering. It's a true suffering. Mm-hmm. It can manifest from anywhere at any point. And so I'm guessing you got into this practice, you know, you're living in New York. What drew you back to London? What was the change that you needed to make in your life?
I always say that, you know, moving there was the biggest lesson for me in our wholeness doesn't exist outside of us. I was absolutely convinced that New York could make me whole. The trauma from my past I was trying to escape from, I believed the answer was in New York. I believed that love was in New York. I believed that hope and success was there. And it had to just feel really hard to be in for me to realize, yeah, wherever I go, there I'll be. So if I'm moving to New York feeling not whole, out of balance, unlovable, well, then guess what? Unless I sit with that, it's going to meet me when I get there. And I had to really see that the answer was within me. So me moving back here was this huge process of, well, wherever I go, unless I sit with what's coming up, it will just keep arriving at the new destination of choice. Or in the next partner, in the next job, in the next city. So it was this really huge piece of, yes, external opportunities. Moving cities is a huge part of the joy of human experience. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, I had to work out who the hell I was before I did that. Because how would I know that New York was the place for me unless I knew who I was first?
And so I guess this might be quite, not a tricky question, but I really want to know like the granular moments of these moves and of these essentially like quantum leaps. Like what's coming up for you? Like what's the mindset piece? Because we often talk about taking risks, but actually to be able to do it and do it at such a young age is a really huge piece of, I guess, your makeup of who you are now.
For sure. I think the first time I moved to New York was for grad school and I went to NYU to study like the history of fashion and dress. And it was a soul calling. I had no explanation beyond an intuitive sense of this is what lights me up in the world and this is where I need to be to do it. So that felt like a very honest decision because outside of the glamour of the city, it was just what my soul wanted and what I felt like I deserved to have. So even if it didn't work out, I still very much felt like there was an intuitive sense of me going there that I just couldn't explain or rationalize. And it was really helpful to kind of move back a second time to then notice the difference. Because when I moved back, I remember when I came back to London, I had to finish up my degree early because I just didn't have enough money to pay for it. And I moved back to London. I was like, I hate London. Mm. I was like the aggiest person you have ever met. Like, I was born here. Like, I always live in London. I love the city. And I just had this like huge amount of distaste for it. I remember getting on the train, Kirsty, and being like, Oyster cars are so gross. Like, I was like, why do we have Tesco? I would find like the biggest, smallest excuses of like how much I hated being here. Because I was like, yeah, well, my life in New York was so great. I need to move back or I can't possibly be happy here. And I was just like desperate to move back. And I wanted to be back with my boyfriend. She was there. And I was just probably quite depressed, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I could see the difference with the first move because I was hoping for an itch to be scratched. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I had this feeling of, I just can't exist in my own skin unless I go somewhere else. So I was just like trying to escape what needed my attention. And my attention was based on like me self-soothing, me finding peace and balance. So you can tell the difference 100% because there is this like intuitive whole sense of knowing. And then there is that very itchy, anxious yearning for something that exists outside of you and the lengths that we'll go to get that remedied when the answer was never out there in the first place.
Wow, it's so powerful. I just love the vision of you hating the tube so much and hating London.
I was just like, I feel so clever. I was just walking around every day just like, oh, why are there so many chicken bones on the street? Like, always.
That's a valid question.
I mean, there's like endless chicken bones and now I find them quite charming. But at the time I was just like, why? They're everywhere.
I get it totally. So I guess what switched for you? Because obviously you are back in London. We uh-huh. met years ago when we both worked in media. So I guess what changed?
I just did the work. And, you know, we tossed that word around a lot. But for me, it was just that really confronting experience of I did my Reiki training and it was very much, I was in like yet another job that I hated and I just wanted to spend some more time with myself. I felt like I'd really lost sight of what lit me up in the world and I wanted to find and reclaim my purpose and passions. So I just did the Reiki course like we'll just see what happens. I had no intention of leaving fashion or beauty. I just wanted to see what else exists beyond it. And on that Reiki course, I just had this very huge inner call to, this was my work to do here. And when we read about that in like spiritual books, it's like, wow, that's the moment. I'm like, it's awful. Yeah. Nobody wants it. It's like, I was having a very pleasant time hating my life in my job. Like, I went to fashion school. I had a system in place. I did a lot of free internships and unpaid internships. So hearing that a decade worth of experience was now going to not exist in favor of like a career that I didn't understand was a lot to be with. And that was a big moment for me. I just spent a lot of time questioning. I was asking myself, what am I carrying? Why is it that I'm looking for my peace in my job, in new cities, in new people? What am I carrying that makes me not trust? What am I carrying that does this? And that process of introspection was the hugest catalyst for change.
Is that something that you still practice now? I know we will get on to talking about your new book. This is so exciting, guys. But reflection, you obviously talk about that a lot in the book. Mm-hmm. And I guess is how often is that a practice for you?
I think it's important. Yeah, I think, you know, when we're doing, you know, the work and we're in periods of reflection and taking things in, we can't stay in that space. It has to be alongside a really fulfilling, very human, normal experience. So like, I'm always doing just regular human stuff. Like I watch endless amounts of TV. I'm always shopping. I'm always doing like real life, fun, frivolous, hot girl stuff. And you have to do that if you're going to also do the work because life is there to be lived. So yes, I incorporate periods of stillness every single day, but they can be like 5 minutes. And then I'm moving on to like checking my emails, doing my work and like living. So I think there has to be, you know, this very real sense of it's just an everyday practice.
I think if people haven't connected with you yet, you'll see that kind of through your portrayal online as well, because I have this real issue that spirituality has to come from a place of being, having less, you know, not, you're not allowed to enjoy the things. Like, you enjoy fashion, you enjoy culture, you enjoy beauty. You know, I met you when we worked at Stylist, like all of these elements, but that doesn't mean you're not a spiritual person. And I think there's got to be this like line in the middle that ties everything together and gets away from the judgment piece.
100%. Like, spirituality doesn't exist to me unless it exists for everyone.
Yeah.
We are all spiritual beings. I say that endlessly because we are. You don't have to do or be anything or eat a certain way or dress a certain way to be spiritual. So for me, it really is just about your perspective and how you see and respond to the world around you. If you do practices like meditation, tarot, any of that, then like, amazing. But if you don't, you're still spiritual. Mm. You're just making time to be with yourself, and also you believe in anything, no names, labels needed. That's what being a spiritual being is about.
Quite right. Absolutely. I love that so much. So for anyone who's listened to this and is kind of interested in Reiki, we've not actually had a Reiki teacher on here. So this is really, really exciting. I'd just love you to give a bit of detail about exactly what you do specifically.
Yeah. So Reiki is a form of energy healing. And basically all that means is, in a session, whether it's by distance or in person, we're just doing some hand positions over someone's body, either real or energetically. And we're just helping to kickstart the body's own natural ability to heal. So I'm not doing any healing in my work at all. I'm simply placing my hands around or on you and prompting that flow of energy to move through you. And what happens is we're just creating some balance. And importantly, and the only reason why I engage in Reiki is because it's not only about the physical. We're looking at physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual balance. And so often we prioritize the physical. So if we go to a doctor, for example, it's very much, I have a headache, I need to not have a headache anymore. When we're coming to Reiki, for example, I may have a client who has headaches, and the headache is actually about, you know, something in their heart space around a grief or the loss of someone 10 years ago, but presenting as a headache. So I can't control what happens in a session. I'm not outcome focused at all. But what I do do is just, I'm just sharing something with you, something you already had within you in the first place. So it's a really empowering practice, because it's not about me. It's knowing that within all of us, we have a huge amount of like unseen stuff. And if we can move that in certain directions, it just helps us to feel a bit more balanced.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I've had Reiki quite a few times, actually. Do you find people are nervous of it? They're kind of trying to hide what might come up for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think in all of my work, whether I'm doing Reiki or tarot or any of my practices, there's a huge amount of fear that comes up and resistance. Because, again, when we're looking at things like that we can't see or rationalize or explain by science, it's just not in alignment with how we understand our world to be. So to be in that space, which is required to be really vulnerable, stuff may come up that you have no idea that will come up. And also meditation, right? So when I did my trauma sensitive training with David Trelevin, it was a huge training for me to do, because I was really confronted by, if most of us, as we all have experienced, you know, a big or a small trauma in our lives, it's most likely that I'll be teaching meditation someone who's experienced that.
Yeah.
So how can I make sure that I'm holding that space, knowing that stuff may come up? And I'm sure you've heard from your clients too, that meditation is not always easy for people. You know, we're in a space of like sitting with stuff, and we have to know that, like, yeah, things will come up. It's a life-changing practice, but things will come up on the way to it being a life-changing practice.
Yeah, and I think it's so important you share that trauma piece. I know we're both trained, and it can feel quite, I guess, difficult. in the industry when you see lots of people not really trained and putting out meditation, because even though people can teach it, there's certain elements in the language and holding the space that you have to think, you're then leaving that person. How are they feeling? Like, what's happening? Yeah. So I think it's a really beautiful point to bring up.
Yeah, I think it is just like really reassuring to people to know that like, it's okay if it's hard. It's okay if you want to finish your practice earlier. It's okay if your breath doesn't feel very good and you need another anchor to pull you into the practice. And I think unless we speak about that, the assumption is, I can't meditate, I'm doing it wrong. And then we give up. You know, I'm sure you've heard endless times, like, my thoughts won't stop. I'm like, babe, you're a human being. It's not going to stop, ever. we should be quite concerned when we do stop thinking. But we are looking for that really delicious pause when, like, you know, we're in between a thought and we can pull ourselves back to something else internally or externally. So I think it is like, how can we call people in? I don't think this work is about calling out things, even though I'm trying to redefine, move things forward, change narratives. Ultimately, we're trying to call people in. So like, how can we get as many people to do this work in a way that feels really safe and reassuring?
Oh, wow. I love that so much. And I think you really do hold that space to reflect back to you as well. You have a very soft nature and it's really inviting. It's really lovely. It's a warm nature.
Thank you.
And what is so exciting is that your book is out tomorrow. I'm so proud of you. I just think to write a book in itself is incredible.
Thank you so much. I mean, it feels completely bizarre and surreal. I'm like, I see the copy on my bedside table every day. I'm like, huh, it's got my name on it. Interesting.
It's amazing. I asked Giselle before, I was like, do you have just a synopsis? And you sent me the whole book. And I felt like, you know, that moment in The Devil Wears Prada where the kids get the Harry Potter manuscript before it comes out. That's what I felt like.
The chosen one, Kirsty.
I was like, I've got it. And it is absolutely incredible. I mean, I'll put all the details in the show notes for this, of course. But I'd love you to kind of give like a brief introduction to the book, and then I've got a few questions of things that just really spoke to me.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So I think when I was thinking about, okay, what do I want to say? The biggest kind of prompt for me was, you know, spirituality has become increasingly popular and that's like the best thing in the entire world. And I just really felt like, so what do we want our generation to say about it? We have this really sacred amount of time where people are listening. There's not as much fear as there was, you know, previously. So if we can redefine it for a new generation, what do we want to say? And writing this book, I wanted it to feel super accessible. I didn't want it to feel, you know, exclusionary. I didn't want it to feel like a private members club that you have to know certain things or to work with the moon or do tarot or astrology to be spiritual. I wanted it to be like a huge perspective on how we can see the world around us. And as the title of the book says, you know, we do that by just taking it in. So when we take it in, we're just really sitting with what is in there. And it's like, yeah, it's almost like a route to manifesting. It's not about manifesting. Because for me, manifesting is very unintentional. If you are looking at the stuff you're carrying, you're working on things like confidence, sitting with your intuition, but also like the really deep stuff like trauma, anxiety, race, privilege, all of that stuff. When we work through that, it just changes how we see the world and how much we think is possible for us here.
I love that so much. Honestly, it's an amazing read. And I was just saying to you before we started recording, it's like Giselle's just talking to you through the book. There's moments where she's like, I'm in my heels on the tube. And I'm like, yep, I can picture her just like that. It's so relatable, which I love. I really loved chapter 4 called So Blessed, So Favored. And there was a moment that I found where you mentioned about confidence. And you said, confidence is a clear-cut observation of all parts that make up who you are. And I just thought that was incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, I think confidence is a word that I've had to really redefine and make sense of for a long time. I was always really resistant to how we used the term, and I couldn't work out why I was resistant to it. And then I was like, but whose confidence are we selling? So if we're speaking about, you know, a confidence course or even like a newspaper article on how to be more confident, I'm like, there's not one version of being confident. Mm. And the assumption of confidence is, you know, it's that very obvious, like, boss babe, red lipstick, power stances, like very loud, very outspoken. I'm like, but that's someone's version of confidence. But for you, it may be you saying, you know what, I'm actually really shy. Mm. I've done my work around that. And it's not actually because I'm afraid of people's opinions. I'm just a naturally shy person in a very authentic, healthy way. Then tell people that. Mm. You can walk into a room and be like, you know what? Yeah, I'm very happy observing. I'm very happy taking a back space, not because I'm nervous, but because me being shy is just who I am. Mm. So how can I be confident about my shyness? And that feels to me like it's for each of us to define what being confident looks like by just being authentic.
I think as well, to reflect, there's a piece that Brené Brown says about how everything is created from vulnerability, and like actually the most confident people are the most vulnerable to show their true self. I think you really captured that. I'd also love to ask you about the link between confidence and worth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I really do think that they're quite related. And I think to move around the world knowing that all parts of you deserve to be here, despite if they look like or sound like anyone else's version of that, we then know that we are inherently worthy of anything that we get in our lives. So I think I said in the book too that we have, especially in the UK, this real affinity to being humble. Mm-hmm. And we love saying things like, oh God, like that's a bit too much for me, I can't go and get that thing. And for you to know that you're worthy doesn't mean that you're taking that from someone else. So we can be kind and confident. We can know what we're worth without saying that someone else doesn't deserve to have something. Mm. So it's almost like, you know, if you're asking for or calling in really big opportunities or really bold, conscious love, you have to know that you're worthy of having that. Mm. And that worth isn't something that is ignorant or obnoxious. It's just you saying, I know who I am. I therefore know what I want. So therefore I'm worthy of what I want.
I love that completely. It's so powerful actually, isn't it? But again, like there's so much practice that goes into that because there's so much associated with, especially females as well, being bold and brash and going for what you want has a connotation that comes with that.
For sure. Like, you know, I spent a lot of time in the book speaking about, you know, this isn't about the becoming. It's not about doing the course to become confident. It's actually about how do I remember the confidence I was already born with. So for me, confidence and worth are not traits that we're learning how to find or to become. It's remembering that we already had them when we were here. Because, you know, when we were children, we were so confident to the point of like, it's just incredible. And I tell this story to my clients a lot, but like I had a best friend at school who would like put snails in her mouth. And she was like, she just liked the feeling of a snail on her tongue.
Oh my
God. And we did like so much reckless stuff because we hadn't been hurt before. We were like, I don't know what a snail is, so I'm going to be really curious about it. We had so much innate confidence. Like, you know, if you go to the supermarket and you make friends with a little kid, they're like laughing and waving at you. They're so confident. They're not like hiding. Yeah. They want to be seen because they haven't been, you know, shut down yet at school when like they put their hands up and people laugh. They haven't been told by, you know, a lover that they're not good enough. They haven't been bullied at work. So when we're children, we see this world with so much wonder and amazement of, I can do anything I want here. So that's what we're trying to return back to, is a sense of possibility and the confidence that we already had, but the world made us lose.
I love that. It's super powerful. The inner child, like why does that become so small? You know, we talk about that so much in ego states and tapping into your emotional side, especially in the practice of like transactional analysis. It's really, really important to kind of absorb that feeling that we all have, you know, that child still in there. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that sculpture? I talk about this so much, but the sculpture from Burning Man, where it's like the two adults have got their backs to each other facing away. And then the two children are on the inside trying to speak to each other. Mm. It's just so powerful. And I think just to get back in that moment is incredible.
It is. And I think it's like really empowering for us to all know that, like, yeah, the confidence isn't out there somewhere in, like, you know, a new outfit we have to buy to become confident. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we know from working in media that part of, you know, the roles there are to convince you that you'll be more confident, happy, successful if you buy the cream, the jeans, the jewelry. So for us to be able to recognize, well, no one can repackage up my own confidence, send it back to me. I already have that. I just need to almost like shift out the layers of people's voices, the world around me, my own stuff to find it. It's so empowering to then say, well, I can buy the jeans or the dress because it feels damn good. I don't need it to tell me who I am.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head completely. That's exactly it, isn't it? And it's funny, when I reflect back on my time in media, I have really mixed feelings about it for that reason, that I think back then we didn't really realize the greater message that what we were working on.
Yeah, and I think there's also, like, you know, I've definitely Googled my name sometimes, seen like some atrocious articles that I've written.
I'm sure you have.
I've been like, oh God. But I think it is like, it's just part of the human experience. And I have, like, as you know from my work, like, I do have a real issue with this sense of like martyrdom with, well, like, now I know stuff. I can't possibly, you know, wear makeup or do all these things because I know more. I'm like, I don't know any more than anyone else. I'm just simply sharing how I see the world around me.
Yeah.
It's not, it might not be your way. I'm just simply sharing a viewpoint and I would love to hear yours. And it's like knowing that through the process of me discovering how I see the world now, I had to work in, you know, a very hard industry that probably made women around me feel really, you know, insecure. It made me feel insecure.
Yeah. Same.
And it's like, you know, we don't have a linear path of like, knowing. It's like today we know. So we will change how we speak, we'll move narratives forward, but we can't diminish what we didn't know before. It's part of our journey.
It's completely part of the journey and the growth within it. Just before, I've got a couple more questions for you. And one chapter I just wanted to hone in on before we leave, because I think it could be really helpful to people, was chapter 10, which is Become a Lover of Now. Oh, and I just love this moment, and just how you speak about in the reflections to say just for today.
Yeah, just for today is the way that I start every day. And it's based on the Reiki principles, which are just like a little foundational set of like five sentences by the founder, Makao Sui. And he created these principles for us to teach, you know, our students when I'm doing my Reiki courses of how, you know, it's just a spiritual way of living, is to come into every day with that intention of just for today. And I wanted to really bring it to more people, because so many of our intentions, like, think about the New Year's resolutions, are these like forever till the death intentions of like, I will run every single day. I will have a green juice every single day. So when the day comes, when inevitably, like, baby, you've broken your ankle, you can't run today, we then start the shame cycle that, oh my God, like, I feel so bad, like, I'm so disgusting. But if we simply say, just for today, I'm going to do what feels good to my body, then we can do that. We can all achieve it that day, because you don't know who you're going to be tomorrow.
Wow. It's really, really powerful. It's really powerful. It's really difficult to stay in the present moment, especially when we are, I guess, female founders, you know, working hard. We've got our vision boards, we manifest, but actually what the difference is that we can make in the day and staying focused on just today are paramount. I try to speak about a principle. It's always, how can you move the needle by 1% every day, right? So if you look at that, like, over a year, it's a huge amount of growth, but actually just on that day, it's totally manageable. It's totally something that's going to feel good to you, and you're going to have the time for the rest and the restorative practices that you need, which are just as important.
So, for sure. Like, I absolutely adore that principle, because similarly, like, I always teach that clarity is just enough knowledge to make the next step.
Yes.
It doesn't have to, like, we can have, you know, big visions of, you know, things in 10 years' time, but it's like, I don't know who I'm going to be tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I can like connect to a really embodied sense of, yeah, I think, and I can feel right now that in 10 years time, I would love to have or do or be this. But all I can do is meet each day as it comes each morning and respond to it by saying, what is this day here to teach me or show me? Mm. When I can respond to that, I will then let life come to me by seeing what happens tomorrow. And it's almost like, you know, how can we just be with the tension of not knowing what happens tomorrow, right? Because so much of our resistance to be in the present moment is we don't like it at all. We want to know. It's like why every tarot reading that I have, someone's like, tell me what's going to happen. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. Like, let's figure out what's happening here. Because if we work through what's here, we'll then get you to what's next.
Oh, I think that's such a wonderful place to end. Thank you. Giselle, you have so much knowledge and I just love your take on everything. Like from the moment I met you, you have this really like vivacious energy and I think it's going to be just bring people in. I'm so excited for the book to be released tomorrow. I really hope you're celebrating yourself. Like to have written a book is a huge accomplishment and I just feel so proud. So congratulations. Oh,
thank you so much. It's such a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. And where can everybody find you?
So I'm on Instagram at Giselle LPM and website of the same name as well.
And I will share everything in the show notes. So once again, thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast, Giselle. I bet you're all just as obsessed with her as I am. She is so lovely, so knowledgeable. Her book and her tonality is wonderful. I really, really advise you to go and read that. You'll be able to consume it over the weekend, pass it on to a girlfriend, really, really absorb the energy. Like literally the way she speaks is the way she writes and it's just beautiful. So you know what time it is. It's time to get really comfortable, really cozy. It's time for this week's mini meditation. So just taking a moment just to let the podcast wash over you, the energy that we felt. On this week's mini meditation, I want you to focus on you. And I want you to allow yourself to just be present, just be still. Nothing else to think about. Nobody else to think about right now, just you. And I want you to imagine that you can see your breath inside your body. You can feel the breath, but I want you to visualize the breath moving around the body. How does that feel? What does it look like? How does it feel? Do you see different light? Maybe you see different colors. What is it that you see? When you focus on just you, when we look inside, what do you see? What can you feel? What can you absorb? Thank you. Slow down your breath. Accept that the mind will wander. No judgment. Accept that the mind will wander. There is no judgment here today. Look at what you see inside. Look at everything that you have inside. Feel your power. Take a deep breath now. Feel that power building in the body, building in the breath. Notice how you feel. Notice how strong you are. Gently opening the eyes, taking that energy with you for the rest of the day. Thank you so much for being here.